Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Finally, Friday is being brought to you this week by Major Spoilers VIPs from around the world. If you want to find out more and see how you can help support our work, head to members.majorspoilers.com and sign up today. Whoop, that's not who I want to have pop up first. There we go. Let's have all of us pop up. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Finally Friday. So glad that you are here. Made it to the end of another week. And this week, oh man, I'm super excited to have Ashley Victoria Robinson return to the show. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Steven.
So what is new with you this week?
Not a whole lot. Just a lot of ramping up for Comic-Con.
Ooh,
it's coming
that
down.
Is coming up. I mean, hotel registration, I think, is that's already taken care of, or does that open up in like 2 days or something?
I have no idea.
Oh man, that's a crazy time because they usually sell out within like 30 seconds of any hotel opening up. So that's going to be crazy. And I expect that there will be huge crowds. Although it's interesting because Denver Comic-Con, that was last weekend, had something like 150,000 people showed up, which is really kind of cool.
And, yeah, I think it's their biggest attendance to date, like far, far and away.
Yeah, and they really made a play on Monday this week when they said that, hey, the Denver Comic-Con is the largest independent Comic-Con now, as far as independent creators coming and showing off their stuff at the show. So that is always good.
Mm.
And then, of course, we have Utah and Phoenix. You guys went to Phoenix a couple of weeks ago. How was that?
Oh, it was like going to Tatooine. It was so hot.
So hot. The Great Nato says that it's 90 degrees in Florida today, but it feels like 103, where that's 37 degrees Celsius for those of you that are into that stuff.
Yeah, man. Celsius.
That's the way to go.
That's my jam.
The way to rock it. Okay. It is pretty hot here
today.
It makes
more sense.
And the other day I went walking and it was 84 when I left at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was already like at 90-something by the time I returned an hour later. So, bah. Summertime is definitely here.
We have a lot of, like, you get up at 8 o'clock and you're like, oh, it's already 90 degrees. I guess today's going to be terrible.
Now, are you in the valley? Are you in a bowl?
I am in the San Fernando Valley, so it is hot.
Yeah. When I lived in California, I lived in Irvine, and so that's kind of in a little bowl in itself. And it was so nice to go down to Newport Beach because you just crest that hill and you just go down and the temperature drops like 15 degrees instantly. And so that's how I would escape
crazy.
The heat. Yeah. All right, everybody. Before we really get into opening phone calls this week, I thought we should talk about the new Star Trek, not Star Trek the series, but the new guidelines that CBS and Paramount Pictures released yesterday that tell people how to do fan films without getting sued. And Ashley, real quick, a lot of this was brought on by the Axanar fan film, which is actually a big movie and a lot of money involved with it and all these kinds of things. They've been back and forth in court and out of court and who has what and does what. And many times I think the producers of Axanar have said, can you just give us some guidelines? We've tried to meet with you before on this. Please give us some guidelines.
They've actually had a couple of meetings with CBS and Paramount to discuss settlements. Mm-hmm. And yes, the number one thing that they were asking for were guidelines. Everybody held up the Star Wars guidelines, the Lucasfilm guidelines, as something to model them on.
Right.
And that's kind of what we got. And nobody seems too happy about it. Even though it was the thing that was asked for, it does have ramifications outside of Axanar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of productions that are going to be affected by this, you know, for better or for worse, but they are here.
Let's go down some of these guidelines. The first guideline is the fan production must be less than 15 minutes for a single self-contained story or no more than two segments, episodes or parts, not to exceed 30 minutes total, and no additional seasons, episodes, parts, sequels, or remakes can be made. That pretty much says no Red Shirt Diaries right there.
Right. And it says no continues, no new voyages, no literally any Star Trek fan film that you can think of that is being made right now is basically just got the axe from that alone.
Right.
And then if they manage to escape that, everything else takes care of it.
Kind of, yes, because number two says the title of the fan production or any parts cannot include the name Star Trek. However, the title must contain a subtitle with the phrase a Star Trek fan production in plain typeface. The fan production cannot use the term official, as you mentioned, or any other subtitle in marketing promotion, social media for fan productions, etc. It's interesting that they say you can't use Star Trek. I was really waiting for some kind of phrasing in that to even include you can't use this specified font or a similar font that represents the original property or Next Generation or ongoing series or anything like that.
Well, I think they probably feel like the rest of that takes care of it.
It might, but I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that could, you know, I made the joke of call your show Wagon Train to the Stars and use that font type. And I'm sure that pretty soon CBS and Paramount will come together and say, we need to change that.
There is a thing further down that says that you must use officially licensed products. You cannot recreate anything. So they could use that as far as fonts if they wanted to, I guess.
Yeah, and that is that's the number four item. And we'll jump back up to number three. But it says, if the fan production uses commercially available Star Trek uniforms, accessories, toys, and props, the items must be official merchandise and not bootleg items or imitations of such commercially available products, which... For some things, that's kind of cool because there is not a fully available, commercially licensed set of the bridge of the Enterprise. So that's good. But anyone who wants to use a costume,
right? It means that you're probably forced to buy the very expensive recreations. If you have a seamstress, you can't make use of their skills. So again, it's just really limiting the field that you can use to equip your production with.
Right. And so I had mentioned our friend Bill Duran. Now, I don't know if he has done any Star Trek related stuff. He does a lot of video game stuff. But even Daryl Skeels, who does This Week in Trek, he's been doing some prop replicas that I don't think he's selling them, but he's been building them himself of the original series phasers. And I think that kind of limits him. If someone were to say, hey, Daryl, we'd really love to use your props in an upcoming project, can we do it? And that statement basically shuts him out of that as well.
Yes, it does.
Number three says the content of the fan production must be original, not reproductions, not recreations, no clips from any Star Trek production. If non-Star Trek third-party content is used, all necessary permissions from all third-party content should be obtained in writing. And that's pretty generic statement right there about make sure you have permission to use this stuff. But it's interesting that they're saying, hey, don't go out there and recreate Wrath of Khan because we're going to forbid you from doing that. Although then they would have to turn around
and
sue themselves.
Or don't lift a clip directly from the episode.
Yeah, true. And that would include, you know, if you're looking for a clip of just the Starship Enterprise orbiting a planet. You can't even use that, which is interesting. And then that kind of ties back into number four, because if you attempt to create your own 3D model of the Starship Enterprise, number four kind of prevents you from doing that even.
It does. It completely does.
Yeah. Number five says the fan production must be a real quote-unquote fan production, i.e. creators, actors, and all other participants must be amateurs, cannot be compensated for their services, and cannot be currently or previously employed on any Star Trek series, film production, DVDs, with any CBS or Paramount Pictures licenses. This one's a major one, I think.
That is a major one, because most of the, quote, larger fan films do employ people who have worked on Trek before, some in bigger capacities than others. And with Axanar in particular, their director has worked on the back matter, the DVD.
Oh, right.
Additional matter. So I think, I wouldn't go so far as to say that that is a direct knock against him, but that is definitely taking into consideration the fact that, like, Renegades has Walter Koenig and Nichelle Nichols and Aaron Eisenberg and Tim Russ on it. There's been Star Trek Continues has an actress named Kipley Brown who had a small part on Enterprise. Like, again, you're knocking out most of the larger scale fan films with that rule.
Yeah, I just think that's interesting. Somebody in the comments says, Just the Red asks, Adam Savage of Mythbusters has done a ton of prop replicas for Star Trek. I wonder if that affects his projects too. This is only for fan films. So if he's doing a how-to, you make your own props or something like that, I think he's okay with that.
And I think if you're just looking for something for like a cosplay, they're not, CBS is not going to come running after out of the woodworks after you. This is specifically to keep people from violating the IP as they perceive it, that they own. So
It's kind of bad because I was really hoping that Clint Howard could get a lot more parts in Star Trek fan films. I guess that's not going to happen now.
He's got a good agent, though.
Yes, he does. Number six, the fan production must be non-commercial. Now, this is a very large paragraph, but basically it says that, hey, you cannot raise more than $50,000. So they are allowing people to go to Kickstarter to do those things. You can only exhibit it, and you can only distribute it free of charge, meaning you have to put it up on YouTube or Vimeo or give the DVDs out for free. Actually, you can't because you can't even do DVDs or Blu-rays. It says specifically that you can't distribute it in a physical format. You can't do any advertising revenue. No unlicensed Star Trek-related or fan production-related merchandise can be made. The fan production cannot derive revenue by selling or licensing fan-created production sets, props, or costumes either. So that means no aftermarket. Once your video is out there, that's it. You can't make any more from it. And that also brings in the question, though, what about YouTube? I mean, if you put it up on YouTube and you have a million people hit that, you have to make that you can't make any money. You can't sell advertising on that YouTube ad by putting it up on your channel.
Yeah, they have to be free of ads, or else you get a little notification and it makes you take it down because, again, you don't own the IP.
Yeah. You're getting a little breakup there, Ashley, but I think we can get you going. Try talking again. Can you
better? Worse? Better?
No, it sounds like you're unplug your USB microphone and plug it back in, and that should hopefully clear it up.
Hello.
It's there. It should be fine.
Hello.
Yeah, the Skype has been really weird this week because Matthew and I recorded Dueling Review this week, and he was nothing but dropped internet and horrible connection throughout the entire time. This number six, though,
I'm sure there's an update coming.
Probably. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that the number six is what's going to land a lot of people in court because we've talked about this before in the Major Spoilers podcast in that we've got a director like Joseph Kahn who went and did that that Power Rangers fan film, which he used his own money. He wasn't looking to make any money on it. He put it up on Vimeo, which doesn't do embedded ads or anything like that. Saban gave him a cease and desist. They eventually worked it out. The film is up there because now they made it clear that it's a fan film. But if it looks too professional and Joseph Kahn could use that to get another job as a calling card, does that make it a money-making venture?
I don't know. That's a really difficult question. I think what this really comes down to is, are you selling merchandise that says, Steven Star Trek fan film
right.
And making money off it. I think that is what you're going to get sued over. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to sue you because, like Dan Trachtenberg made that Portal fan film and then, mm-hmm. He got to direct, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Like, I don't think that anyone's getting sued for that, but you're right. You're profiting off of something that you made with someone else's IP. So it's a difficult question.
Number seven is rather interesting. The fan production must be family friendly and suitable for public presentation. Videos must not include profanity, nudity, obscenity, pornography, depictions of drugs, alcohol, tobacco, or any harmful or illegal activity, or any material that is offensive, fraudulent, defamatory, libelous, disparaging, sexually explicit, threatening, hateful, or any other inappropriate content. Content of the fan production cannot violate any individual's right of privacy. And that, I think, is just basically saying, hey, porn parody people, knock it off.
Yes.
Which I think is super interesting.
Well, there are Star Trek porn parodies. So perhaps this was their chance. They were like, if we're going to go for broke and we're going to knock everybody out of this. Mm-hmm. But also, even if it says parody, fair use is a security blanket.
Right.
As far as a legal defense goes, like, you can still go after people who claim fair use.
Now, you said this was lifted from basically the Star Wars thing, and there has been the Star Wars porn parody. In fact, I think it's Vivid Entertainment that releases it.
Yes.
Through Axel Braun, whoever releases it, and has sold quite well for the company. And you would think now that the porn parody came out after the sale to Disney, and you would have thought that Disney would have jumped all over that and shut it down and not allowed it. I'm wondering how quickly someone like a Wood Rocket or Vivid or Wicked will go and do this just to tempt to see if CBS or Paramount will take them to court.
I think it depends on how good their lawyers are and how much money they're willing to spend on that.
You're right. You know, the fair use is the one that they fall under. And certainly there have been great examples of Star Trek and Star Wars parodies, true parodies, that work really well and fall under the fair use and would be exempt from a lot of this stuff. But I wonder how long before the fair use and parodies pops up as a legal case.
It could. I think it's also worth noting that none of these can be brought down on anything retroactively. So something that was made before these guidelines came out cannot be sued for not knowing what these guidelines were. Exactly. There are things like there's a law, there's a rule in there about including a piece of text about how this is owned by CBS and Paramount. Like, that's probably something that if you have a Star Trek fan video, you might want to go and put that on your website or whatever. But unless somebody does, like you said, unless a company gets their hackles up and decides to go and make something to tempt fate, everything that exists right now should pretty much be fine.
Yeah, I think so as well. Now, you'd mentioned number eight, the fan production must display a disclaimer, and it's really wordy and long, but it says it must be on the screen credits of the fan production and on any marketing material, including the fan production website or page hosting the fan production. And for the most part, and this goes back to, I believe, Sandy Collar, or maybe even sooner, with the Batman Dead End Alley or Dead Alley or whatever it was, that people have been saying, hey, we want to make it clear that this is in no way associated with Star Trek or CBS or Paramount or anything like that. So fans have been putting that, or smart fans have been putting that ahead of their videos for a long time. And I think that that's pretty common. In fact, this is a very generic statement that if you're doing something for Batman, if you're doing an Aliens thing, or if you're doing a G.I. Joe thing, you can rework this and replace the appropriate IP owners with the property in that statement and make it work for you. And I think that that's probably a pretty good way to avoid some legal troubles in that way.
Definitely.
Creators and fan productions must not seek to register their works nor any elements of their works under copyright or trademark law. This one is super fascinating, and I feel like this one is directly, not in retaliation, but directly aimed at the Axanar people, because while maybe even the ones that have the Star Trek Continues stuff, in that, yes, Axanar and other fan productions are using characters and settings and terminology and props from the IP, there could be something that the fan film creates that is unique and of its own, that I wouldn't say that Paramount would say, well, because it's ours, we're going to use it, but that a fan could then take a character or location or something in an attempt to trademark or copy protect it, and then turn the tables on Paramount and try to sue.
There are examples. I don't want to get into it too much of fan productions that have, because I've just seen them on Twitter and whatever, that have created classes of ships or specific designs or pictures and stuff like that. And then they try to sell, they trademark it and they sell them online or in stores. And then, but they're still using Star Trek logos and stuff like that. Okay. And that gets real hinky. Like sometimes it becomes the question of like, can you sue for Vulcans because they're characters with pointy ears, and characters with pointy ears have existed forever, and who really owns that? Like, and that's a legal battle that, like, is even outside of trademark. Like, it's a huge question.
Right.
But again, if you're using their images and their logos, it's still not yours.
Fan productions cannot create, this is the final one, fan productions cannot create or imply any association or endorsement by CBS or Paramount Pictures. Basically, that means you can't walk around and go, yeah, we talked to CBS and they're totally cool with this and they're on board with everything we do, kind of thing.
Right, and there are a couple of fan films that I have heard that with. I know there are fan film creators who have had meetings with CBS. I don't know what the capacity of those meetings are. They might just be, hey, you guys need to stop. Or they might be, oh, we want to pitch this as an ongoing TV series. Thanks, but no thanks. Mm-hmm. But there are, that is a thing, I don't know outside of Star Trek fan film, but that is definitely a thing. People really like to say, oh, we had a meeting with CBS.
And sometimes
those, because it sounds like it means something.
Sure. And sometimes those meetings have been nothing more than, hey, we would like some guidance on if what we're doing is okay or not. And those have actually happened in the past.
Yes, there have definitely been those.
Yeah. So I think that may be some of the stuff. But to go around and just say, hey, man, we're officially working with CBS on this would be a big no-no on that. And then, of course, CBS wraps up the document. You can read this all over at StarTrek.com. They have a fan films section that lists all the guidelines. They basically say they reserve the right to make changes to this at any time without notice, now and forever. So,
yeah,
there you go. So what's your overall thought on this? For me, it feels like those are pretty common sense kind of things that mm-hmm. you should try to avoid whenever possible. And especially for those people that are trying to make money on it, it basically says no, whatever. I don't know. I think these are generally fair, although I think that it's very crippling and hobbling for many people. And that if you want to make a Star Trek fan film, maybe you would be better off just making a generic space film.
Right. But then you don't get that built-in audience.
but that's true. But you also own that property.
Yes, definitely. My thoughts on it are, I've seen a lot of articles from Star Trek sites that come out and they're like, oh, these are really uncool, or CBS put up these rules and they suck. Mm. And these rules are exactly what people have been asking for. Even before the lawsuit came down, like, people have been asking for guidelines for a long time. Everybody held up the Lucasfilm and the Star Wars guidelines as this holier than thou thing that we should base it on. That's what you got. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can be mad about that. And also, CBS and Paramount own the copyright.
Right.
Everybody
right.
likes to say that fans own this and fans contribute that. And that's a beautiful idea. But Gene Roddenberry sold it to Paramount and CBS. Mm-hmm. Paramount and CBS owns it. If I owned an IP and people made, you know, and people were making fan content on it, there's a certain amount of flattery that comes along with that.
Oh, sure.
But when you perceive people are stepping on your toes, mm-hmm. then you have to act. And that's what this is. And I don't think it's fair for people to call this mean or rude or crippling, but it's definitely going to change the face of what Star Trek fan films are. And there are mm-hmm. some that are beloved. And so some people are going to be upset by it. But for me, I just think that it's a really logical and actually very kind thing, because they could have told fan filmmakers, you don't get to make anything.
Right.
We'll just sue you.
Right, right, right. And I think that this, I mean, so the couple of questions that are popping up, some people are kind of upset about these fan rulings, saying, oh my gosh, how can they do this? Some other people are asking, you know, again, what about the parody use? And if you're using for comedic effect, there's a very defined definition of what parody is in the U.S. court system.
You have to comment on the right. source material.
Right. You have, and you can make fun of the source material. You can comment it. You can make fun of it. You can do, you know, a lot of different things. But if you go under the fair use doctrine and you look up the parody section, and there's four things that you have to prove to use fair use. The parody section is fairly broad, but I think that the definition is pretty clear on what you can and cannot do. And this is why, when it comes to the porn parodies, that a lot of people start scratching their head. Because, again, if you look at the Star Wars porn parody, it's basically Axel Braun, I think, is the director on that. He just basically said, hey, here's my take on Star Wars. It's the same story. It's the same plot. But all these people are having sex. Therefore, it's protected because it's a parody. They're not mm-hmm. trying to make fun of anything at all. They're basically remaking Star Wars in those films. I mean, not that I would know or anything. I haven't seen it or anything like that. But it comes to that. It's interesting that this right now covers fan films, and so we would think that this is video entertainment. But what about someone who wants to do their own fan audio? Or what if someone who is doing their like a real play podcast, where they're doing an RPG that's using a Star Trek mechanic system and recording that and releasing that? I wonder mm-hmm. how that affects those other outlets.
I think that there's a chance that this is going to get extended to that. It's the question that always arises about fan art as it is displayed at conventions. Because again, it's the balance between, if you're trying to make your name, people are going to come over to look at your Harley Quinn art. They're not going to come over to look at the thing that you created, because they mm-hmm. don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. This is it's not an unprecedented move, because again, Star Wars did it like 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. But this is a big thing in the public zeitgeist right now, and I think there's a good chance that it will come to extend fan art. And I think fan fiction will pretty much be left alone, because it's usually just disseminated on the internet for free. The big question here is, are you profiting off of it? Because that's what a big corporation administration doesn't like.
Yeah. Someone's saying that these the rules are BS and are unfair to the fans. How are they unfair to the fans?
They're, I mean, I would just argue that they're not unfair to the fans. Fans, mm-hmm. fans don't own. I know we really like our stuff, guys, but we don't own it.
That's the thing that a lot of people have problems with, is that when we talk about these things that have become general use things. I mean, me giving the Vulcan sign. I mean, that is something that's ingrained throughout our pop culture, throughout our culture, not just pop culture, but throughout our culture. Or if someone says live long and prosper, same thing. It's part of our culture. And so we feel like we have that has become fair for anyone to use at any time in any meaning. Unfortunately, it doesn't, as long as that property is still being protected by copyright in the United States. What were you going to say, Ashley?
I was also going to say that I think that people, we lose sight sometimes, that we all do it, of the fact that entertainment is a business transaction. Making a TV is a business transaction. Making a comic book is a business transaction. And so it falls under the rules of business and business ethics. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes those make us feel icky, but that's what it is.
Yeah,
guys.
I taught a class on Star Wars and pop culture. Now, this is not Star Trek, and usually when you bring up Star Wars and Star Trek in the same conversation, people flip the F out. But I posted
okay, we're
this
by sci-fi
chat.
Here.
Yeah. But I taught a class called Star Wars and Pop Culture, and I did a whole lecture on Star Wars and fan films and what it means to have participatory feedback or participatory conversations. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what fan films are. And in the lecture that you guys can look at, you can see where this is a dicey conversation, because if I feel like this is something that's ingrained in pop culture, then I should be able to do it and say it and do whatever I want with it. But unfortunately, when it comes to the courts and the legal system, we can't do that. And so there is this very, I don't know, it's troubling. And you can see both sides of the argument, that, man, we should be able mm-hmm. to create whatever we want because we love this stuff and this is part of my creative outlet. But on the other hand is, I'm taking someone else's ownership of something and manipulating it in a way that owner does not want. And then that gets into a whole issue of what copyright laws were set up to do anyway, in that copyright, trademarks, etc., were set up initially by our founding fathers so that people who created that intellectual property would be protected for a certain number of time, and they would be able to sell and market and make money from that idea. But then after a certain amount of time, it would expire, and the expectation was that this would then go into the public domain and people could do with it what they will. And that would allow you to go in and do fan films and things without repercussions. Unfortunately, and this is where, were you going to jump in on something like that, that I said there?
I was going to say that if people take issue with the fact that, things that you love are not in the public domain at all mm-hmm. times, or even after a lapse of time, you need to take that up with Walt Disney, because all of the original Disney characters, should be in the public domain. But because of the way they've held onto the Mickey copyright, that set precedent for mm-hmm. Superman should be in the public domain right mm-hmm. now. And Superman will never be in the public domain. Batman will never be in the public domain, because giant corporate entities get their giant corporate lawyers. And mm-hmm. then that makes the law.
Yeah. And so if you really, and again, if you want to investigate what we're talking about with Mickey Mouse laws here, and truly Mickey Mouse laws, go and look in the Mickey Mouse copyright case, and I believe that it was either 76 or 80, and this was the first thing that extended copyright to 75 years after the death of the author or the creator, and now we're bumping up into that, and I think it was extended to 100 years. Now, the way the copyright laws are changing is basically a corporation is considered an individual, and as long as the corporation is still around, then the copyright, it basically extends into perpetuity, which means that the Mickey Mouse copyright would never expire, meaning that Mickey Mouse would never be in the public domain, Superman, all these others would not be in the public domain. If you want to go into a legal case, I would suggest people go back and listen to some of our Major Spoilers podcasts, in which I talk to Dr. Melissa Hunsicker-Walburn, who is a lawyer, and we talk about copyright, we talk about the trademark, and we talk about what was supposed to happen with it, and why things like the San Diego Comic-Con attempts to sue the Salt Lake City Comic Con, why people are constantly going after Mickey Mouse, people who are, you know, like Disney going after Dead Mouse for use of the mouse type symbol. It really gets into this area that, as some of you are pointing out in the chat, yes, copyright law is terribly broken, unfortunately. And these things should be in public domain. In fact, the Max Fleischer animated Superman stuff are in public domain, but none of the other Superman stuff is. And there are a bunch of Mickey Mouse comic strips that were not renewed as part of a copyright renewal. And so there are, I think, about 2 years worth of Mickey Mouse comic strips that are in the public domain. And they're kind of, you know, interesting because in one of them, Mickey Mouse attempts to commit suicide.
Oh, no.
So there are things that have slipped through copyright track, and, you know, and I can understand why people are, you know, want to use that stuff. But until copyright laws are changed to release this stuff, it's not, unfortunately. And so Star Trek will always be under the protection of the government and the ownership of CBS and Paramount, Batman, Superman, Mickey Mouse, etc. I would say, hey, man, call your congressman if you're really upset about this. But unfortunately, lobbying interests are going to outweigh your single phone call. And even if there were a million people, even if 100 million people in the United States called and said, hey, man, we want the copyright laws changed so that this stuff is now out into the public domain, it's still not going to outweigh the tens of thousands of millions of dollars that lobbyists put in to make sure that their interests are protected. And we can see this right now with what's going on with, and I hate to put this into this example, but we can see this going on right now with gun control or gun tightening of the gun laws. This is exactly why, you know, 88% of America is in favor of stricter gun control rules and regulations, but nothing's happening at the government level because of lobbying interests. So I can understand why those of you who are in the chat room who are upset about this don't like it, but unfortunately that's the rule system that is currently in place. Anything else you want to add, Ashley?
I was just going to say that if it is something, like if you want to make a fan film based on a thing that you love, the best way to go about doing it in a way that will keep everybody nice and safe and everybody nice and happy is to contact the IP holder and try to buy it from them.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's because this set of rules, this Axanar case, this is going to set a precedent, and I can guarantee you that it will reach beyond Star Trek.
Yes. Oh, yes. And I'm sure. And interestingly, for a time, the Star Wars Fan Film Festival had been stopped initially when that was bought up by Disney. They have since started that back up again. And so you do have some IP holders, and especially George Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy, who really understand that fans are helping to keep a franchise alive. And by giving them leeway to do certain things, not whatever they want, but to do certain things, that it keeps interest in that property alive and well going forward. I like what Ashley said about contacting them about licensing. Every corporation has ways that you can license their products and their ideas to put on popsicles or T-shirts or refrigerator doors. So that might be another way to do it. It's still very expensive, but that would be the legal way of going about it.
And it might be as simple as sending someone an email, because that's how Andy Weir sold The Martian. Somebody emailed him and he sold it for $11,000.
Yeah.
If you're looking at some smaller properties, you might get them a lot cheaper.
You know, it's really interesting when you do reach out to the rights holders. Sometimes they are very generous in what they do. For example, Ookla the Mock, which is a pop culture band that many of you have heard before. Maybe if you haven't, go look them up. They're really great. But I just reached out to them and said, hey, we would love to use your song at the end of our Major Spoilers podcast. Can we do that? And Rand, one of the performers in the band, wrote back and said, absolutely. In fact, we love what you guys are doing. We want you to use this. And by the way, I'd be happy to write for your site. So now Rand is writing for us. So there are some real positives that can come out of just reaching out to rights holders. Now, Disney, you're going to get into a lot of trouble with.
Right.
you're not going to get in trouble with them, but their answer is going to be, thank you, but no. Let me tell you an interesting story to kind of show how this can work even at a corporate level. When I was teaching in Atlanta decades ago, a couple of my students said, hey, we want to shoot this scene in a restaurant. This conversation between a couple has to take place in kind of a restaurant location. We were thinking of something like a Waffle House. And for those of you that don't know what a Waffle House is, it's a chain of restaurants, mostly in the South, that serve like chicken and waffles type stuff. And I said, well, you're not going to be able to do it because of franchise rights and ownership rights and all these things. But I said, here's what we should do if you really want to do this. We'll make sure that we have a written letter from the store manager owner of the local one that you're trying to do. And then we will contact the corporate headquarters, explain to them what we're trying to do, and see if they will let us shoot there. And so basically, we had the written letter from the local owner. We contacted corporate, told them what they were going to do. And they're just like, hey, send us a letter that explains everything and tells us that you're not going to use our Waffle House signs or logos or anywhere in your shoot, and you'll be perfectly fine. And so we did. We faxed it off to them. They sent it back within an hour, signed off on it, and said, please go enjoy, you know, shooting your stuff in our location. So
nice.
Sometimes it is that easy to do that. Now, that was, you know, 20 plus years ago. Today, they'd probably say no, but it is worth always trying. Okay, everybody. Oh, so Nate Olson says Waffle House is evil. I don't want to say that Waffle House is evil, but they're not. If you need to clean, I will say this. If you need to clean your lower intestines, Waffle House is a good place to eat. Let us open the phone lines now. 785-727-1939. That's the Major Spoilers hotline. Of course, you can always look for me at Steven_Schleicher on Skype. And we would love to talk with you on this Friday afternoon. We've got about 25 minutes left in the show that we would love to hear from you. Again, 785-727-1939. We do try to keep it positive and clean for some of our new listeners that are joining in for the first time. Another interesting story that popped up this week that may have a lot of people initially upset is that DC's Legends of Tomorrow has cast a new star as Vixen. And from that initial reaction, some people would say, wait, Meglin is not going to be Vixen anymore? And no, she's still Vixen. Her schedule didn't allow them to work her into the second season of DC's Legends of Tomorrow. So the new actress that they've cast, Maisie Richardson-Sellers, she will play the grandmother of the present day Vixen. So I thought that was kind of an interesting story.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, it's not Mari, so
yeah.
It'll be okay.
I think it will be okay, and I think everybody will understand that. Let us jump. Whoops. Hold on just a second. Matt, let me call you right back. Let's bring back on. Sorry about that. I forgot to add the person to the conversation. So let's add Matthew back in. Let's see if he picks up.
Da, 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 da.
Matthew, call right back. Sorry about that, man. Oh, man. Okay, so next week, actually, we're not here next week. Next week, I promise, I will have this whole phone system figured out because here comes another phone call that will not let me add it to the conversation.
If I get muted, it's okay.
Yeah, it's just really weird that it will not let me add some people to the conversation and other people get added without a problem. So, Matthew, let me
To update your Skype.
No, it's definitely not that because I checked this earlier today and it says, nope, your version of Skype is totally up to date, dude, until Monday when it won't be.
Oh, no, not you. Not you, like the person who's trying to call in is probably needs to update their Skype. Usually the reason why something goes wrong.
All right, so I guess you're going to be bumped on to hold. Let's see, what does this button do? Ah, there we go.
That's okay.
Nope, I think you're still there, Ashley. So, Matthew, what's going on today?
I was able to play the Back to the Future board game this last week.
Ah, so we've talked about this. A lot of people have talked about this. So what did you think?
Well, the artwork is, it's weird looking. If you're coming at it from like a normal board game art, it's what I expect is what the IDW comic books are.
It's pretty close to that. They tend to be a little bit more realistic than the comic books. The comic books tend to take the characters and turn them very cartoony. This one's kind of a mix between photorealistic and cartoons.
With board games, looking at the components of it, the cards, the graphic design is a little, it's very busy. It's kind of hard to see what some of the stuff is. Some of the art, I'm not sure if they were just trying to extend it a little bit. Like there was one card was literally the mirror flip of another card.
Oh, really?
So I drew these two cards, and it was Doc and Marty. Then another card beside it was Marty and Doc.
Oh, wow.
And just exactly the mirror image of it. So I don't know if they're just doing that just so it looks a little bit different, I guess. Maybe you don't recognize it unless they're both beside each other.
I guess. What did you think of the gameplay? Because I've looked at a couple of playthroughs, and I've looked and see what some other people have said about it, and it doesn't seem to be positive.
It's very convoluted.
Yeah.
Is probably the best way to put it. It's essentially set collection. You're trying to, in three different time periods, get a set of three different characters that are in the three time periods are listed, and this is the event in 1955, and you need Doc, Marty, and Biff, or Doc, Marty, and anybody, or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
So you have to get the steps involved just to be able to play a card. So first, you have to, the DeLorean has to be in the time zone. So the
right.
The copy I had came with a Hot Wheels car.
Yeah.
So you could replace the little cardboard token with a Hot Wheels DeLorean, which was kind of cool. So once you get that, you have to pick a character at the beginning of your turn, and when you pick, say you pick Marty, and you do the special ability that Marty has, but now you can only play a Marty card. You can only play him in the time zone that the DeLorean is, unless you pay to move it out of the cards, and every card has multiple things on it. It has time and power, so you can move the car, or when you play the card, so you get a Marty and you can play him in the time zone or the time era that you're in. Now you have to pay the time value of the card.
Yeah, it is so complicated.
You gotta get rid of other cards, and then depending on what area you're in, there might be a ripple effect.
Right.
So there's no ripple effect in 2015 because you're not going back in time to change anything. But if you go to 1955, you have to pay two ripple cards. Now, you get the cards that you burn for ripple go face down in a pile, and you get those victory points marked. So you get the points of those, but you have to kind of sacrifice their usefulness as a character or as...
So what's the bottom line? What's the bottom line for you on this? Is it a fun game, or is this a game to pass on?
Unless you are the most diehard of Back to the Future fans, and it's more of a you need it to fill that board game hole in your Back to the Future collection. Yeah. I would pass.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. It's with our Hastings sales that are going on. It's up there at our Hastings for like 50% off. And I was still like, nope, not going to buy it. Sorry. So, anyway. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. What do you know about Lost Cities, the card game? I watched a demo of this the other night, and it looks like a fantastic game.
That's one of my favorite two-player games.
Okay.
It's so easy to like the rules for it, but it's it can go back and forth depending on if one of you is going to be mean or not. It can really escalate and turn south.
It says, I think it says 10 plus, and I really think that both of my young kids, even though one of them's just five, I think they would, from what I saw, they could both learn how to play this game and understand it.
I think so. Sometimes the age restrictions on, or they're not really restrictions, but the age guidelines on a box have little to do with the complexity and more to do with legality.
Okay.
Of small pieces in a box.
Oh, okay.
This game has small pieces, and I'm sending it to Europe. 14 and above. We're not even going to deal with it. You put 14 and above, it can go to Europe.
I see. Ashley, have you ever played Lost Cities?
I have not.
It looks really fun. I just post a, you can find it on our Amazon link over at Major Spoilers, but basically you are laying out cards. Part of it to me, honestly, feels like Gin Rummy, where basically you're putting out cards, escalating up as you try to pay off your expedition and have more money at the end of the game, more quote-unquote points or money at the end of the game than your opponent. And you know, there are certainly ways that you can screw over your opponent because it's a counting up game. You can go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, but if you start at 8, you can't include any number lower than that. So
oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it's looks really interesting. I did pick it up, and it's going to be headed our way. But I really think my young kids will be able to play it and have a lot of fun with it. And maybe both of them will stop killing each other over stupid things and start killing each other over card games. All right, Matthew, thank you so much for calling in this week, man.
Yep.
Bye-bye. All right. That was good to hear from Matthew. Last week we were talking about, or a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about that Back to the Future game, and I said I wanted to know more because everything I'd seen of it just did not look any good. Do you have time to play games lately, or are you just super busy?
When was the last time I played a game? We played Star Trek Catan like a month and a half ago.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's probably it.
Well, what are some cool projects that you're working on right now? Because that's been in several weeks, almost maybe a month or so since you've been on the show.
What is something cool that I'm doing? I'm now the full-time host of Comic Book Now, which is comicbook.com's live streaming web show on Facebook 5 days a week, and a bunch of secret stuff that's not finished, so I can't tell you about it.
And are you still with a certain publisher?
Yeah, I'm still editing over at Top Cow, making the books happen.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's fun. But most of our projects right now are in the various development hell phases.
Ah, I understand. Let's go to the hot Orlando and talk to Nate O. Hey, Nate.
Ooh.
Hey, guys.
What's going on with you this week?
Oh, just hot.
And the worst part is it's like humid. I mean, the humidity is the worst part of that, right? I mean, our friends in Arizona are burning up with like 122 degree temperatures. You know, somebody's literally cooking pizza on the sidewalk because it's that hot. Yet it's a dry heat, right? And if it were 122 degrees in Orlando or in Miami,
we'd be dead.
People would be dead.
Yeah, I didn't even know. When we went to Utah last year, mm-hmm. it was 101 when we were in the valley.
Right.
I had jeans on and like a short, kind of a, you know, longer sleeve shirt, like elbow shirt. It was mm-hmm. perfectly fine. I was like, this is nice. This isn't too bad. Yeah, here, 90 degrees, you add 10 degrees to it. It's. I walk the dogs a little, like around 4 o'clock, which is probably the worst time to walk your dogs.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I was like, oh my God, no, stop. And it's like, hurry up, I'm dying.
When I worked at, years and years ago, I worked at Disney World for a summer. And we always knew 2-3 o'clock, it'd always rain. But at night, because I wanted to go out and run, I had to wait until like 11 o'clock at night before I could go out and run because it was still so hot and humid. Blech.
Yeah, our low is 80 degrees today. That's our low. Because tonight it will stay around 80 degrees. But it's weird in Florida because the coast, it's only 80, 90 degrees because we have the sea breeze and the blowing and stuff, but it's still the humidity, the moisture in the air does not let that heat escape. Mm-hmm. And you just, blah.
You feel it. So what's on your mind this week, man?
Well, I wanted to thank Ashley and Jason for answering my question on their cool Jason Talks Geek show.
Yeah, it's definitely fun.
Yeah, man.
And I'm glad it was a cool one. You guys enjoyed that question, so that was good. After the third time I asked, I'm sorry?
It was a top-tier question.
Oh, it was a top-tier question. Just want to say that. And the IPO stuff, which mm-hmm. which really funny, is not a lot of people remember, but when 2001 Space Odyssey came about,
right.
The movie house actually went to IBM and had to pay for those logos and all mm-hmm. that stuff that they used.
Right.
And it was some weird amount, thousands of few thousand dollars for them to do it.
Right.
And it was like, today it's unheard of. IBM would be paying the movie house. Okay, mm-hmm. if you show the logo, it's this amount. Well, mm-hmm. you have to pay us this amount. If we, or like with my company, if it's in the scene, it's this amount. If they hold the product, yeah. it's a little more. If they consume the product, then it's even more.
Mm-hmm. Man,
you know, if it's in 50% of the shot, then
imagine how much money Universal made on Back to the Future from your company.
Oh, that and Bill and Ed. or not Bill and Ted, Wayne's World.
No,
that whole thing was a PepsiCo commercial. So.
Wow. Well, I mean, it is a way to fund, right? I mean, that's something legitimate. We see that happen a lot of times where, hey, we need to get funding for this. And so we're going to go to these companies and try to sell the product. Otherwise, when you see the can and the logo is obscured or it's turned around or the hand is over the logo at the right place, it just means that, hey, they aren't willing to pay for this. So there they go.
Yep. You see it on Big Bang Theory all the time because mm-hmm. I see products on there all the time, but they have, you know, one of the A's kind of filled in so it looks weird. Mm-hmm. So it's not actually licensed, yep. but then again, it's actually the product.
Well, and then also because it's a CBS series, when they go to the comic book store, it's all DC. Most of it is DC-related product, and then occasionally you see some Dark Horse in there.
No.
Yeah.
That is because Marvel charges a ridiculous amount of money to have their comics in there. Like, even if you look at something like Comic Book Men, mm-hmm. there's no Marvel comics unless it's an accidental shot. They really don't like to not have control over their IP, even in the background of a shot. Whereas DC's just like, yeah, you can, whatever, go for it.
it all boils down to money. It's mm-hmm. not boiling down. I mean, you can say it's not boiling down to creativity and stuff being out there, because let's face it, just like piracy and stuff, it brings that IP to the forefront mm-hmm. of anything, and
right.
people talk about it, people right. look at it, people want more of it. So yeah, is it a necessity, a evil necessity of the world? Yes, but when it's down and dirty, even my company, when it's money, that's
yep.
all it is. It has
yep.
nothing to do about killing creativity, does not really serve anything else that people they want to do. They just want to make sure that you're not making money because of what they've created.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I have received cease and desist letters from your company's biggest competitor in the past too. So anybody who wants to protect their stuff and feels threatened will attempt to shut you down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. The last thing is, if you did not go see Voltron, if you haven't seen Voltron, do it.
Okay.
It is so good. The writing or not cinematography. I'm so bad at this. Basically, the story through this going from one episode to another is
mm-hmm.
just like The Last Airbender or Legend of Korra.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
It doesn't have a distinct ending. It has like a distinct ending, but it doesn't end, and you have to go into the next. They don't, you know, it's kind of stretched out, but it's not.
Yeah.
But the animation is phenomenal. Again, it's the same, I think it's the same animation team that did Legend of Korra. But I finished it, and when it was done, I'm like, wait, there's no more? So I'm like, on my edge of my seats waiting for more Voltron. So, but yes, I highly recommend it. If you have not seen Voltron, definitely watch it. 11 episodes, phenomenal.
Yeah, I have not had a chance to watch that yet, Nate. It's down on our list. I was hoping to get the kids interested in it, but my oldest is about to head off to his grandparents for a week, so that'll curb that for a little while. And the youngest, if it doesn't have Lego in it, he's really not that interested. So he might be for
sitting
giant.
In my queue
he might
right
be
now.
For giant robots that assemble into a giant robot thing. He might be interested in that, so we'll see. Have you seen Voltron yet, Ashley?
No, it's sitting in my queue waiting to be consumed.
Well,
I'm watching Bloodline right now.
You're watching
Speaking
what?
Of Florida.
Bloodline.
Bloodline?
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that an HBO series? Or
like, it's a Netflix original.
Oh, okay. All right.
So.
There's so much out there that I don't even know about. The weird thing is, it's like, I knew that they were making an updated Odd Couple series, but I didn't know it was in its third season already.
Yeah.
That's, I'm out of touch. All right. All right, Nate, thanks so much for calling in, man. Have a great week.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
You too.
All right,
bye.
Ashley, we are just about out of time this week. We got time for one more one more call. I was reading the comments there. Sushi Go Party is also a great game to check out. So there you go. Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
We could talk about all the Justice League stuff that's come out.
Okay, so a new Justice League logo and synopsis was revealed for the movie. Ben Affleck got to release the image on his Twitter feed. And then, of course, Warner Brothers released the synopsis. Basically, it says, fueled by his restored faith in humanity and inspired by Superman's selfless act, Bruce Wayne enlists the help of his newfound ally, Diana Prince, to face an even greater enemy. Together, Batman and Wonder Woman work quickly to find and recruit a team of metahumans to stand against this newly awakened threat, but despite the formation of this unprecedented League of Heroes, it may already be too late to save the planet from an assault of catastrophic proportions. Did you get to go to that? Were you part of that set visit thing?
Nope, I sure wasn't.
So a bunch of reporters and websites were allowed to go do a press junket, I guess on the set of the Justice League movie. And so there's a lot of Forbes really went into a lot of detail, more so than a lot of other sites and outlets that I've seen. And basically, it kind of confirms something that we've been talking about here on Major Spoilers for a while, is that it seems to be following the storyline, maybe not all the exact details, but the storyline of the first Justice League story in the New 52, where Steppenwolf and Darkseid are invading from another parallel dimension, coming into this one. Parademons are attempting to kidnap people and make off with them, which is why the Justice League gets involved. And the big bad in the first Justice League movie, they did confirm, would be Steppenwolf, who would be leading this charge, this invasion of Earth. So what do you think so far, Ashley?
I think that it sounds freaking awesome.
I think
and
it does
I
too.
Think that I think because they kept so much of BVS secret, mm-hmm. they're trying to really go the opposite now and give as much without spoiling anything as possible. I know that the scene that I got to see was the first scene that J.K. Simmons shot as Commissioner Gordon. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to look like he's supposed to have the classic look with the whipped cream hair, which is really cool. And I think that there. My understanding is that in Ultimate Cut and in some of the things that we have seen, the little clips that were cut that were released a week after BBS aired, is mm-hmm. that the Steppenwolf and the Mother Box and the dark side of it all was planted and then was maybe cut away by corporate yeah. overlords who didn't understand the implications that they were taking out.
Right.
And I think that by putting that out in a very public statement, it's going to be harder to axe off the back end as well.
Yeah, I'm curious. I have not watched. I mean, I have the R-rated extended super BVS movie, but I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah.
To see how much different it is. Have you seen that yet?
I've not seen it yet, but okay. I am looking forward to seeing it soon.
I'm interested. The reason why I say that is because the nightmare sequence from BVS, the one where Batman's running around, you know, like killing people, and we've seen the parademons and the giant Omega symbol burned into the earth. And then we see mm-hmm. you know, the Flash pop out and say, yeah, it's all about Lois Lane or whatever. You got to save her. I'm wondering if that isn't in an extended cut made a little bit more clear that maybe that's a parallel Earth instead of some time travel
yeah.
shenanigans. Because that would make a lot more sense. That would make a lot
more sense.
I would
love that.
Sense. Yeah, definitely. And so I would encourage people, again, go back and read that first arc of the Justice League in the New 52. And it kind of feels, that's the vibe that I'm getting, it kind of feels like they're taking that story arc, not the individual beat points like Superman and Batman and Hal Jordan fighting in the streets, but that invasion storyline that was also part of Earth 2 Society or whatever that was, and combining those together and telling mm-hmm. this movie. So, very cool.
Nice.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the wording that they're trying to make this super more friendly, I guess is the best word for it, to not make it as dark and deep. Any reactions to
right.
that?
I don't think making it lighter is necessarily a bad thing. It's definitely going to be, I think that's going to come a lot from The Flash and Cyborg. I don't think mm-hmm. we're suddenly going to get a jokey Batman. So I hope that people are not expecting that. But I think that when you have a team full of diverse people, you have a chance to introduce diverse and different dynamics, and mm-hmm. that might not be a bad thing necessarily.
Excellent. Cool. Well, I think, everyone, we have run out of time for this week's Finally Friday. I want to thank Ashley Victoria Robinson. Thank you, Ashley, for joining us once again.
Thanks for
this
having
week.
Me.
It's always fun to have you here because you're so knowledgeable about everything, and we love talking with you. So whenever you want to come back, you are welcome to come back. And for everyone who popped into the comment section at on the YouTube channel, or for those of you that are commenting below at the comment section at majorspoilers.com, thank you so much for participating in that way. Thank you to all of our callers, and thank you to all of our Major Spoilers VIPs. Without you, we couldn't make this show possible. And until, well, actually, we're off next week for the July 4th weekend. We'll be back the week after that. But until then, take care, and we'll talk with you soon.